Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the kingdom of God. We're going to talk about banking today. How do you do banking in the kingdom of God? How does that operate? What does that look like? We know about banking, or we think we know about banking in the regular world, in the world that men have made for themselves, and all men are not good men. So they don't always make good decisions, and they often create systems that are bad for themselves, bad for their society, bad for the community as a whole, bad for the future, etc., etc. If we go back in ancient history, we see that there were vast storehouses of grain in Egypt, and grain was often used as money. They had other forms of money. They had scarabs, which were clay carved beetles that were baked, and they had little numbers and symbols on them, and they represented value. And usually that value was associated with grain, because grain was a way in which to store large amounts of what was an essential fact of life, which was grain. You couldn't store large amounts of cabbage or potatoes, because it would only store for so long. They didn't even have potatoes then. That's an American vegetable or tuber. What the fruits and vegetables that they produced, they did not keep, but grain could keep for many, many years, and it could sustain you during very hard times. And so it was often used as money. Even beans were used as money, because they would keep, and they would keep for long periods of time, which would mean that during famines, you could go from year to year and still have enough if you had enough grain stored to begin with. We recently have talked about the fact that in the world today there isn't any more than about 30 days supply of grain when they're done harvesting grain in the United States. They'll be harvesting in other parts of the world. Everybody in the southern hemisphere are harvesting grain at the directly opposite period as we harvest grain. When I used to work on wheat farms in North Dakota, we saw custom combiners coming up from Texas who had been harvesting grain in Texas and Oklahoma and Kansas and on up until they got to North Dakota. And some would actually even go on into Canada and harvest grain up in Canada later in the year. That's the cycle of the process, so that grain is constantly flowing in. But then you get into January and February and nobody's harvesting grain anywhere in the United States, but they're harvesting grain down in Argentina and Australia and other places like that. So those grain producers will be sending grain around the world when we're not. The problem is today is the grain has been purchased in large amounts by big dealers who sell all of our surplus grain off rapidly, so that if there isn't a crop in the southern hemisphere, we actually may find ourselves short of provisions. We've seen how the Soviet Union has stopped producing or selling grain abroad, and that means that other nations will have to make up that difference. It's simply a bad situation in the world today that we do not have the 6-year supply of grain that we used to have on the farms stored away in bins all over this country. We just don't have that anymore. The bins are not being used. They're empty, or they're torn down, or they're in disrepair. And there are more people in America than there ever was before. And we are in an extremely vulnerable state because our food is completely dependent on refrigeration. But what does this have to do with banking? In Egypt, granaries were included. Priests, became bankers through the loan of seed grain in many societies, and main temple and dependent structures were the most important buildings, although many smaller, often isolated temples existed as well. In other words, the temples were the banks. They included the storage of grain because that was a very valuable commodity and could be used as a storage of wealth. And that had come down in Egypt because Egypt, one of its main exports was grain. It could grow rain in many years because of the floods, the aqueduct systems that they created through huge numbers of civilian employees, because 20% of everything you made went to the government. Well, when there were good times, they still took that money and used it to improve agriculture, to improve the aqueduct system of water to the crops. This idea of banks, granaries, has carried down into modern times, except we don't use the grain anymore. But we do have the scarab-type money systems where the scarab has no real value except what's printed on it. And the gold and silver that was confiscated by Pharaoh through the famine and kept in his treasuries was no longer in the hands of the general population. They didn't use that as money. They used the scarabs and grain and other forms of credit. Today we have a Federal Reserve. When the Federal Reserve Act was passed back in 1913, it opened the way to a vast inflation of currency in a flood of irredeemable paper currency. Well, it used to be redeemable. We won't go into all that now. But it also, from now on, depression will be scientifically created. That was the words of Charles A. Lindbergh in 1923. He had opposed the Federal Reserve Act, talking about it creating one of the largest trusts in the history of the world. He said the financial systems have been turned over to the Federal Reserve Board. The board administers the finance system by authority of a purely profiteering group. The system is private, conducted for the sole purpose of obtaining the greatest possible profit from the use of other people's money. And that, again, was Charles A. Lindbergh Sr. This idea of creating the largest trust in the history of the world, that's another whole matter of money, which we won't go into. We're going to try to focus here on banking itself. It says, beware lest thou lose the substance by grasping at the shadow. And that's really what we've done, is that we've lost the substance of our money, and we have in exchange a fiat currency. It wasn't always fiat. It was redeemable at one time, redeemable in lawful money. I always thought that was interesting. It used to be printed on your bills that a Federal Reserve note was redeemable in lawful money, which would tell us that the Federal Reserve note was not lawful money. And, of course, it also stated on the note that it was legal tender. It was a legal offer instead of money. It wasn't lawful money. You could get lawful money for it, but it was not lawful money. So without lawful money, you couldn't buy lawful title. Also, everything you bought with that became a surety for the debt because you never really paid. You cannot discharge a debt with a note. These are layers that you should already understand. If you read the book Covenants of the Gods, you should have a fairly good grasp of this. Most people have no understanding of how money works, but again, we're going to try to focus on banking. The regional Federal Reserve banks are not government agencies, but are independent, privately owned, and locally controlled corporations. That's quoting Lewis versus United States. By continuing the process of inflation, government can confiscate secretly and unobserved an important part of the wealth of their citizens. There is no subtler, no surer means of overturning the existing basis of society than to debauch the currency. The process engages all the hidden forces of economic law and hide the destruction, and does it in a matter which not one man in a million is able to diagnose. That's John Maynard Keynes in Economic Consequences of Peace, who explained a great deal of how this system works and how and why it was instituted. We want to believe. I heard last night a debate between two men vying for the position of federal senator in the United States in the state of Oregon. And they were both, you know, countering these questions that were brought to them by the City Club. And they were never addressing the problem. They were always just trying to decide two sides of which part of the problem are we going to implement. They aren't going to solve the problem. There is nobody running for office really anywhere that I've seen in the United States that actually wants to address the problem. And one of the biggest problems is the fact that the people have not taken the time to understand how these systems of government work. It's fundamentally flawed. The United States federal government is fundamentally flawed. Even the Constitution itself is fundamentally flawed, and men talked about those flaws on a regular basis for the first 100 years of the United States existence. They used to be taught in school. Why did they teach about the flaws of the Constitution? It's so that you would be guarded against the foolishness that could come about because of the Constitution and your right to contract. What we see now is not unconstitutional. It is very constitutional because you have a right to make these agreements that create these institutions and count out to these institutions and neglect your responsibilities, and that's what we've done. So let's understand a little bit more about this idea of banking. In the Bible, we see in Leviticus 19:36, just balances, just weights, just ephah, and just hen shall ye have. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. These scarabs or Federal Reserve notes are not just weights. They are bought by the pound by the Federal Reserve after being printed by the United States. At least that used to be the process. The process has actually changed with the new notes. The new notes are an entirely new system of money. But that's another subject which we won't go into. But the fact is they are bought by the pound, $10 bills, $5 bills, $1 bills, doesn't make any difference, and then loaned into circulation at usury. Diverse weights are an abomination unto the Lord, and a false balance is not good. And that's exactly what we have. Our clad coin has no silver in it, really. And it's not like the silver money where you used to be able to buy a loaf of bread with a dime. You can't do that anymore because you don't have a silver dime. You have this unjust weight and measure. It is well that the people of a nation do not understand our banking and monetary system, for if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning. That was Henry Ford. Sir Josiah Stamp, president of the Bank of England in the 1920s, who was considered the second richest man in England, said, "Banking was conceived in iniquity and was born in sin. The bankers own the earth. Take it away from them, but leave them the power to create deposits, and with a flick of the pen, they will create enough deposits to buy it back again. However, take it away from them, and all the great fortunes like mine will disappear, and they ought to disappear, for this would be a happier and better world to live in. But if you wish to remain the slaves of bankers and pay the cost of your own slavery, let them continue to create deposits." Create deposits. That is an interesting concept. And before we're done, we're going to talk about exactly what that means and why the solution to all the banking problems that we've had for the last couple of years, for the last 60 years, for the last 90 years, could have easily been solved and resolved if you people in America actually took the time to figure out what was going on instead of thinking that you're going to elect some congressman or senator or president who's going to solve the problems of the world without ever addressing the cause of the problems. You are in there trying to make something out of a mess that you need to undo from its beginning. Now, you don't need to tear down the whole system. You need to alter the direction you've been going. And we're actually going to lay out for you several different ways in which you can alter the direction you've been going. And you can do this on an individual basis in communion with a few other people and start making a difference. You don't need a majority of the people in the United States to decide to do the right thing. You need to decide to do the right thing and do it now. And there are many things you can actually do now. Thomas Edison once said, interest is an invention of Satan. And, of course, we've been told over and over again in the Bible about usury. Well, the fact is, use taxes are usury. Property tax is a use tax. Income tax is a use tax. All these things are usury, and they're all part of the same kind of system, and you need to get away from that. You can't get away from that unless you start changing what you're doing and why you're doing it, the very essence and motivation of your actions in the world. A banker by the name of James Warburg, and son of the Council on Foreign Relations, founder Paul Warburg, confidently told the United States Senate on February 17, 1950, that we shall have world government, whether or not we like it. The question is whether world government will be achieved by conquest or consent. That's an interesting concept. Now, we've recently suffered this huge problem with banking here in the United States. There was this multi-billion dollar bailout, which is actually rising in its cost on a regular basis. We just had seven more banks close because of the particular financial solvency. Supposedly the FDIC has stepped in to solve that problem, but they are not addressing the problem. They are putting a Band-Aid on an infected wound without ever disinfecting it, without ever really addressing the problem. And you would be amazed at how simple and easy it would be to address the problem, how all the financial problems in the United States would just vanish away. I mean, these monumental financial problems would just vanish away, how we would not have millions of people kicked out of their homes. This could all be solved very easily. You don't believe that? Keep listening. You probably won't get to the whole answer in this show. You'll have to listen to us on First Amendment Radio, on Keys of the Kingdom. So go to firstamendmentradio.com. And we'll tell you what that solution is and more solutions that you can start to implement in your life right now. They probably won't accept the major solution, but you can start doing something about it, even though the general population of the world is not going to accept the major solution, even though it's very simple and very life-saving, and there wouldn't be any more of this foreclosing on homes in the capacity that we see now. Millions of people would be put right back into their homes and be able to have a thriving economy right now if we went this other way. And the solution has been around. It was actually used back in the 1990s. And we could use it today, but they're not doing it. They're not going that way. Why aren't they going that way? It's so that millionaires can become billionaires, and that's why they're doing it. Everybody wants to know where the problem is. There's a number of things that brought about this economic problem. People are thinking, oh, well, we should have not been making such easy loans and on and on. But the reality is, back in November 12, 1999, President Bill Clinton signed the Financial Modernization Bill. And he stated at the time, in the 1930s, in the trough of the Depression, when the Glass-Steagall became law, it was believed that government was the answer. It was believed that stability and growth came from government. Overriding the functioning of a free market, we are today to repeal Glass-Steagall because we have learned that government is not the answer. We have learned that freedom and competition are the answer. We have learned that we promote economic growth and we promote stability by having competition and freedom. I am proud to be here because this is an important bill. It is a deregulatory bill. I believe that is the wave of the future, but I am awfully proud to have been part of making it a reality. And he goes on and he addresses all the people he thanks, including the U.S. Congress and Senate, for bringing this bill about. And that what this bill did is took off all the safeguards that would prevent another depression. Anybody who understood why the Siegel bill was put into place, it was because of the fact that all the things that were going to bring about a depression were legal and being practiced on a regular basis. And so they restricted those with bills so that you could not bring about a depression so easily. But, of course, that's the purpose of the Federal Reserve, is to bring about depression, to change the way in which Americans view history, to control the wealth of the Americans, and to drain that wealth off very cleverly without people even knowing it. Income tax is nothing. That is a minor tax compared to the tax that you're all going to pay with inflation, because inflation is literally a tax. And it is instituted to make rich men rich and you poor. And you're going to see the fruits of that rather quickly here in the days to come. You already can see it if you have any kind of a memory. Like I said, you used to buy a loaf of bread for a dime. You don't do that anymore. You used to buy a gallon of gas for a quarter or less. And you don't do that anymore. And why? Because you don't have just weights and measures, because you've created a usurious system where all the money is loaned into circulation, and you have given the power to bankers to create deposits. Creating deposits is a major problem in all this. Where are we going with all this, and how will we answer this? We're not going to get it in a half-hour blog talk. But I will say a few more quotes here. I hope we shall crush in its birth the aristocracy of moneyed corporations which dare already to challenge our government to trial of strength and bid defiance to the law of our country. Okay, who do you think said that? That's from Jefferson's letter to George Logan. That's way back. Well, what the Siegel Act was doing was controlling these creations of government, which are corporations. Corporations are children of the states. They are inventions of government, and they should control them. But evidently, Bill Clinton and thousands upon thousands of other people thought, well, we're going to not regulate. We're going to have free enterprise. Of course, that's not free enterprise, because the corporation already has an advantage. It doesn't die. It lives on beyond the natural existence. It doesn't. You don't inherit that. And it is a creation. It is the golem of ancient times, these clay monsters that are created to do the bidding of men. And they need to be controlled, and they should be controlled. And it has nothing to do with the free enterprise of individuals. It has to do with money corporations. And what they did is take off those controls and let those money corporations run rampant. And the people were stupid and foolish and fell into the traps that they create on a regular basis. The interests of the corporation state are to convert all the riches of earth into dollars. And, of course, there was an extensive effort to do this, as William O. Douglas said that. But you should read people like Kissinger and what he did, going around trying to create convert all the wealth of the world into dollars. If all bank loans were paid, there would not be a dollar or a coin or currency in circulation. Someone has to borrow every dollar we have in circulation. We are absolutely without a permanent money system. And this is by design, because now you can control that. We have corporate money, corporate falsities that we use instead of money. Now, the Bible says in Proverbs 1:14, cast in thy lot among us, let us all have one purse. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, and they lay in wait for their own blood. They lurk privately for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy for gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. And we've all played participants in this. This idea of mortgages, etc., and how they're instituted, how they're created, where that money comes from. We have to understand this is an old game. It is constantly being played out. And there is a solution. And Christ had that solution. The early church had that solution. And the modern church hasn't got a clue what the early church was doing. The first procurator from Tiberius appointed over Judea found in Caiaphas a sufficiently submissive instrument of Roman tyranny. Procurators were imperial financial officers. The office was generally in the hands of the Roman knights, which chiefly consisted of financial men, bankers, chief politicians, and other of the knighthood had sunk to a new low state. And the exaction of such a rule, especially in Judea, can better be imagined than described. That's from the life and times of Jesus Christ, or Jesus the Messiah, but really, Rome had not yet conquered. It was a commercial interest that Rome was exercising and protecting with its armies. It was a peacekeeping force to prevent civil war, and it was doing a pretty good job of that. But if you don't understand the money powers, remember what we started talking about, the temples were banks, and that's exactly what the case was. The temples are banks. That's what we're dealing with today. Ephesus was the world bank of its time, and yet the apostles were accused of robbing the bank at Ephesus. What are we talking about here? Even the royal treasury was in the temple of Herod. Why was it in there? They are a system of commercial banking in those temples, and your temples today are still the commercial banks, including the Federal Reserve. So we're going to talk about the solution on First Amendment Day. And what you can do, and what should have been done to begin with. And we'll see you there. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.